When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey y'all, this is Josiah Gray, and this is Half Street High Heat. Hope you enjoy today's episode.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Half Street High Heat. As we continue on with our player rankings, I am Nick. I am joined by Trey this episode as we continue on with our player rankings. We're doing second base tonight. Before you do anything, be sure to follow us on Twitter at the Coach Moose for myself and at Reverse, two R's, two S's for Trey, and the show at Half Street High Heat. And be sure to check out Half Street High Heat on YouTube and hit that little bell so you subscribe to our channel and are up to date with all the latest videos Trey is putting out on the YouTube channel. Trey, what's going on?
Nothing much, man. I'm just really excited that pitchers and catchers are reporting, and the Super Bowl's over. It happened yesterday when we were recording this, so it's baseball season officially.
It is. Well, I mean, I might veer back to hockey.
I am in baseball mode with
the Mets. It's baseball mode. Spring training, obviously, there's a little bit of buzz going around that feels like wasn't quite there last year, but maybe it's just because my outlook on the Nats has changed since last year. Because we were talking about this on the last episode where I, you know, was with Ryan and Amanda, but like going into last year, we knew or we expected the Nats to really, really be bad, but we hadn't seen it yet. This year we've seen it. that's basically the difference. So I think that's just kind of lingered and had an effect on my personal outlook on this team, but not necessarily in a bad way. I guess it's more just readjusting expectations or reality, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, probably gonna be more of the same,
I would think so. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, it's definitely just brings the expectation. Like, now you know, you've seen it. Seen it now. You're used to it. You know what it might look like. It could be ugly at times, but it's going to have to be that way for a little while. So,
yeah, just got to work a little harder to find joy. That's all.
yeah, for sure.
But it's there. Well, hopefully it's there. You never know. All right. But yeah, we are continuing on with our play rankings tonight. Like I said, we're doing second base. Another position that has shifted a lot, but not like catcher shifted a lot because of young talent. And not that there's not young talent at second base, but it's more so you get a lot of utility players, a lot of guys moving around the diamond and into the outfield. Some guys switching from short to second, some guys switching to second base this year. And, you know, we're doing our best to kind of project. So it's like, it was unique in that sense that it was kind of left to interpretation in some regards, with some of the guys we have on our rankings. Whereas, you know, just a little preview, we get to shortstop, third base. It's going to be pretty clear cut. For the most part, who the best of the best are, and even that second tier, like, it's still pretty strong. But second base, it was kind of interesting to dive into the numbers and go through it. Did you have kind of the same experiences when you were putting together your list?
Oh, for sure. It's definitely hard because a lot of guys are utility guys at this position and could play a different position. So we were just trying to figure out who was going to be, you know, the go-to second baseman for these squads. You know, we also had to take out a couple guys. We're not ranking Trevor Story because he's going to be missing most of the season. with his elbow injury. Jazz Chisholm is moving to center field, apparently. So he is no longer involved in this list. He would definitely be on it if he was. So that opened up some spots. But realistically, you know, there's a lot of guys that you've seen before, but definitely a lot more shifting in where they've been because of guys overperforming or underperforming. It's kind of been a little bit sporadic at this position. So I'm sure that the rankings are probably similar in terms of players from mm-hmm. last year, but I bet the rankings themselves are all over the place compared to this year. So it's a little different, but
yeah, that's for sure. One thing, and I don't want to get too ahead of ourselves, but one thing I noticed too is like there's some guys that were really high on last year that struggled in 2022, whether due to injury or, you know, just kind of a down year. And initially I was like, oh man, are we going to overcorrect? Like, are we going to completely drop them out of our top 10 or whatever? And we didn't, because we kind of see the way back sort of. But also second base is a position where it's a lot of guys that are just very okay. Like at second base, like there's not a bunch of below replacement level talent that's just clogging up second base that it feels like there has been in years past. You know, it's still not like the best position, you know, if you put second base versus shortstop or second base versus third base or anything like that, it's not the best, but there's that middle class of second baseman is very good, but it also is so deep in that middle class that, you know, you don't have a lot of names for the top 10. So we actually did have kind of a lot of overlap in our respective lists, Ryan, Trey, and myself, just because, you know, there's guys like, I think I use Gleyber Torres as an example. Mm-hmm. And I know Yankees fans have some like polarizing take on Gleyber Torres. But, you know, as a Nats fan and not a Yankees fan, Gleyber Torres like had a fine year last year. Is he top 10? No, not at all. But there's a bunch of guys like him around the league that are just pretty solid at what they do. It's just they're not top 10. So it kind of left us with a shortened list, but it's still a good list in my opinion. So it's interesting to kind of see how these lists change from one year to the next. But without further ado, let's dive into it. We are going to start at the top once again this week because I kind of like how it flowed last week. So we're going to do it again. Starting at number one, this really shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone. He's been the best second baseman in the game for quite some time. He's the best second baseman in the game last year. And who knows? Next year, he's probably going to be the best second baseman again. That's Jose Altuve. Feel the way you want to feel about him, but you can't deny how good he is. Last year, 5.1 WAR, 300 batting average, 28 home runs, 57 RBIs. But keep in mind, he's obviously batting leadoff or near the top majority of the time, so the RBI numbers aren't going to be crazy. Still managed to steal 18 bags in his age 32 season, which, you know, 18 doesn't sound like a lot, but especially with the stolen base numbers dropping year after year, stealing 18 bags is solid. And it's not inconceivable to think he could be a 2020 guy this year. He's obviously 33 and you would expect the stolen bases to come down a little bit, but again, it's not inconceivable to think he could do that. And also, what second baseman is slugging over 900 consistently? Because that's what Jose Altuve did last year. A 921 OPS. I get he's still in his prime. Usually prime goes to age 34-ish before you see a drop-off. So he's technically still in his prime, but he's undersized. Not that that stopped him, but he's undersized and all that stuff. And even though he's, 5'6", 5'7", he still hits for power. So it's like you would expect a drop-off to have hit him at this point, but it's not. He's consistently, you know, doing things he shouldn't be doing and really improved upon what was already a very solid 2021 season. He went up 30 points or, you know, 22 points in batting average, up 37 in on base, up 40 in slugging. Like, he was so good last year that it's impossible not to put him at the top, in my opinion. And Trey, I know you agree.
Yes, I do. I mean, to put it simply, Jose Altuve had the best hitting season of his career last season. And it is kind of strange to think that, you know, he feels a little older, but he's only going into his age 33 season, because he's been playing since he was, you know, 20, probably. So it feels like he's way older, but he's got plenty of time left to continue this. And I can't see him not continuing this. You know, I feel like maybe between 19 and 21, there was a, you know, he kind of, the opinion shifted a little bit to some other guys that maybe were trying to take him over. But last year pretty much solidified him as the best once again. Interestingly enough, he's actually had the first season with a double-digit walk rate, which is so funny for Altuve, because you think of him as swinging at everything. So, which he can hit. He can hit well that way, swinging at everything, which, so there's really no issues. But if he's going to also get on base like this, I don't really know how you stop him, because he just continues to hit for so much power despite his size, like you said, Nick. And he's the best. There's really no other way to put it.
Yeah. I mean, we don't have to spend too much time on him, but you know, you kind of caught my attention when you said it was the best year of his career. So I'm like looking at his
by WRC plus.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to get to.
I should have specified, but
yeah, but even his OPS plus was the same last year as it was during his 2017 MVP campaign, where he hit 346, 410, 547 with a 957 OPS. So it's like, yeah, the actual statistics, the, you know, basic statistics don't match up, but you know, the advanced ones do. Like, he's still very good. And that was, it's crazy to think 2017 was like 6 years ago at this point. But yeah, like, it's still,
I know,
you know, crazy to think he's still doing this. I thought for sure he was going to have a decline, a steep decline at this point. And not, you know, thinking, I mentioned his stolen base numbers earlier, 2019, 2020 was obviously shortened, but 2019 and 2021, he had 6 stolen bases and then 5 stolen bases. So you're like, oh, well, he's definitely focusing more on home runs, because he had 31 in each of those seasons. But then here comes 2022, he has 28 home runs, but then he has 18 stolen bases. So it's like, is Jose Altuve going to decline? I don't know. But at this point, you know, you kind of just got to go with what's in front of you and stop trying to protect his downfall, because
yeah, there's really no,
yeah,
there's really no reason to even, we should just wait until he finally has that downfall, because
right. Yeah, it's like, I don't, it's the Tom Brady effect. Well, I'm not comparing the two, but people always projected Tom Brady to fail, and he kept just doing the damn thing forever.
That's pretty much how we're going to have to look at Altuve. Until he actually has the decline, he's the best.
Yeah, honestly. Or like, until someone
really
else at the position really challenges him consistently, not just for a flash in the pan 1 year type thing that we've kind of bought into the past couple of years, even though it's pretty safely been Altuve as the best, you know, each season. But yeah, Jose Altuve, very solid. It's no surprise the Astros are working on a contract extension for him right now, because he's still very good, and the Astros know that. So Jose Altuve comes in at number one.
They're going to keep him around for, like, I can't 100%. Really see him going anywhere else besides that team.
Right. Agreed. All right. Moving on to number two on this list, who arguably was the best second baseman last year, if we're being honest. But because it was his breakout year, we're not trying to overreact, again, at least, and put him ahead of someone established like Altuve. But it's someone you might not have heard of if you're kind of just a Nationals fan or a casual baseball fan. Andrés Giménez out of Cleveland had quite the year last year. A 7.4 WAR, 17 home runs, 69 RBIs. Nice. 17 home runs, 20 stolen bases. So, again, almost 2020, not inconceivable to think he gets 2020 this year. 837 OPS, 141 OPS plus. Age 23 season is basically, you know, the big point to this. And I had him second. Trey had him second. Ryan had him fourth, I believe. Fourth. So it comes in at number two in our consensus rankings. So there's all that offensively that I just mentioned. He's also very, very good defensively. And so it's like Cleveland as a city, not even sports specific, but as a city gets, you know, underappreciated or, you know, dogged on constantly or whatever. But their sports in particular, you know, the Guardians constantly get overlooked. And that's in large part due to the fact that they're not very active in free agency and stuff like that. But they've been consistently solid and consistently producing young talent for years now. They've never been really players in free agency, yet they made a World Series back in 2016, and they've been pretty competitive ever since then. They're not going through a prolonged rebuild like the Orioles had to, or the Nats are in the middle of right now. The Guardians produce talent, and Andrés Giménez is just the latest in a long line, and, you know, will probably be replaced by another guy who is the latest this year with how their farm system and player development is working. But I mean, he's very, very good. So if there is someone who can conceivably challenge Jose Altuve for the top spot, I think it's Andrés Giménez, because he's so young. Last season was so impressive, and he's playing on a team that values player development. Like, I think he could be the guy.
You know, I agree that eventually he's going to challenge Altuve. Obviously, he's still extremely young, so that's
for sure.
That could take a couple years, but obviously, going based off of last year, he was incredible. He is arguably the best defender at the position. There's another guy that I really like, but he made some unbelievable plays last season, and unfortunately, he's actually made a lot of them in the shift. So I wonder how that's going to impact him, because I, at least, you know, the eye test, some of his crazy plays actually happened in the shift, his craziest ones. So I,
good that, old that eye test.
Yeah, that's just the eye test. But eye test says he's a good defender, and the metrics agree. But yeah, so really, I was more impressed with his bat last year than anything. I kind of knew that he was an impressive defensive talent, even as a prospect. That was really his main ability that everyone raved about when he was coming up.
Right.
But the bat was extremely impressive. He hit for way more power than I even knew he had. He was a doubles machine, as well as hitting 17 homers out of the second base position. And he also, like you said, he stole 20 bags, and he was extremely efficient. He only got caught 3 times. So he has he's just a really fun player to watch, really. And yes, I think eventually he could challenge Altuve, and it could be this season. We don't know if he really this good, or was this just a flash in the pan and he's not this good of a hitter. We don't know, but I'm pretty sure he's this good. He seems like he's this good, so I hope so, because I really enjoy watching him play.
Yeah, he was Cleveland's former number two overall prospect and was a top 100 prospect, which I probably should have known, but found out when I was putting together these rankings. So it's safe to say, like, he had a high ceiling as a prospect, and, you know, maybe last year was his ceiling, but at the same time, maybe it wasn't. There's still some room to grow, because, you know, even his FanGraphs, like, prospect report said, like, he probably wouldn't hit for power, but if he's going to hit 17 home runs a season, like, he's going to provide value, obviously, outside of just defense, but he's going to have good advanced metrics to back that up. Like, he's, you know, so good at contact as well, that he's not going to be one of those guys that hits like 40 home runs and only has like a 200 batting average. Like, that's just not his profile. So if he's adding some power as he matures, and obviously, like we said, he's only in his age 23 season, going on age 24 season. If he's adding power to his game, which was the missing piece, yeah, he could be very, very good. So he's definitely someone to watch, especially if you kind of like the player rankings comparison aspect to baseball or just sports in general. Yeah, he in my mind, he's the guy that could definitely overtake Jose Altuve for that top spot. So Andres Jimenez, remember the name coming in at number two on our rankings.
Also led the league in hit by pitches.
I was just about to say that. Like, I don't know. Cause like, I know Anthony Rizzo gets hit by a lot of pitches cause he grabs the plate. Does Jimenez do that? Or did he just have like really bad
luck?
You
know, thinking of it, I can't really think, like, he doesn't seem like he crowds, like he's not like way off, but I can't think of him crowding the plate. Like Rizzo's literally like
on
borderline, not even in the batter's box.
Right. He's so, Jose Tabra, like on purpose.
Yeah, it could just be one of those things where he just is able to like successfully lean into pitches and not get called out for it. So I don't know, but
yeah,
that was exactly, that was an interesting blip.
Exactly. All right. Moving on to number three in our rankings is a guy I've been a fan of for quite some time now. A little bit of a rough start with his new team, but really picked it up down the stretch and it was good to see because, like I said, I was a fan of his, or have been a fan of his for quite some time. And that is Marcus Semien, your second baseman for the Texas Rangers last year. And I guess I should mention this. When I say war, I'm using Baseball Reference. Obviously, if you use FanGraphs or F-War, you're going to get a little bit of a different number, but this is Baseball Reference. His war last year, 5.9 war, 26 home runs, 83 RBIs, 248 batting average, 733 OPS, 108 OPS plus. So Marcus Semien, by his like recent standards, down year. But if you go from June on, like from June on, the Rangers got the Marcus Semien they paid for, the Marcus Semien they gave that 7-year contract to. So he had a really, really, really bad start to the year. Like, not trying to bury the fact that it was very bad, but he came back strong and that led me to believe like he will be just fine. Like, if you're just a quote unquote box score merchant and just looking at his stats, you're like, oh, he sucked last year. I mean, sort of, but not really. Like, did he repeat his 2021 where he had 45 home runs and over 100 RBIs and an 873 OPS? No, not at all. Like, his numbers were way down from 2021. But one, the Blue Jays, as Ryan loves to point out, the Blue Jays played down in Florida at the minor league stadium. I can't remember the name of the minor league stadium for
Eden or something.
Yeah. Or where was it? Was it Jupiter, Florida? Anyways, they played down in Florida for like half the year due to like COVID restrictions up in Toronto. So that was short porch, warmer climate, inflated power numbers. So Marcus Semien benefited from that. And it was kind of unrealistic of any team or any fan to expect him to repeat those numbers. But, you know, you go back to his 2019 season, which, again, was the last full season, you know, after or before 2021. Like, he had 33 home runs, 92 RBIs, and 892 OPS. So, like, he's done it before. And that was in the Coliseum of all places, you know, not a hitter-friendly park. So that's just a long-winded way of me saying, like, I think he's going to be just fine because he finished the year so strong. If he had started really hot and then cooled off majorly, like if his seasons were flipped, like first half was in the second half, I would be concerned. But because he like figured it out and went on a torrid stretch of hitting home runs, I don't think he had a home run basically up until July. And he somehow finished with 26. So I do think he'll be just fine. And I know I had him at number three. Trey, I believe you did as well. And I think Ryan did as well. I think that was one of the ones where we all three agreed. Yeah, Ryan did as well. So I think we're all in agreement that Marcus Semien entering his age 32 season will be just fine.
Yeah, no, for all the reasons you said as well, it was definitely a really bad start for Semien. And he had like one home run through May. And still almost had 30 to finish the season. So yep. That's very, very encouraging. And it seems like it can just take those free agents some time to get used to their new spots. Like we've seen with other guys in their second years really showing out. So, but yeah, the second half was so much better all around in terms of hitting. He was hitting a lot more line drives. I think one thing that he had gotten used to last year was hitting fly balls and having them just leave the park because
yep.
Toronto. It seemed like he was kind of having that same hitting approach in Texas, but that park is a completely different beast. It's a Costco
warehouse.
Yeah, it's not going to the ball doesn't fly like it does in Toronto. The fences are way further back. And I think he discovered that and actually upped his line drive rate in the second half to over 20%. And that really helped him out to become more of a doubles guy. And I think that's kind of what I've always thought of Semien as. He had that huge homer season because he was in Toronto, but he is much better as a gap to gap doubles type of hitter. And he basically does everything right. He's a great defender at second base. He's actually been one of the best since moving there from shortstop. And he was unbelievable. I didn't even realize how good he was on the bases last year. Plus seven BSR. That is insane. Extremely efficient base stealer. And he's in his 30s still doing that. So clearly they like his speed. And I think his numbers on the bases will probably only go up because of the rule changes. So yeah, mm-hmm. I have a feeling Semien is going to have a season, you know, probably closer to something like his 2019 year, or at least hopefully approaching that level for this Texas squad next year, based on how he played at the end of the season. And he actually is striking out even less now. So that's nuts. So we'll have to just see. Hopefully he'll have the reverse luck effect. He'll regress positively for this next season.
Yeah. And I also think that team's going to be better than they were last year, which
100%
should have a trickle down effect on the guys that were solid last year, but should have a trickle down effect on the rest of the team.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get into Seager, but he had a similar kind of path as Semien, where they both just kind of didn't have it at the beginning of the year, and then they both found it, and they actually played pretty well. They just that team didn't have the pitching last year, but
yeah,
we'll see.
this year they added
some stuff. So
they're one of those teams where you can see the path forward to being good. Are they going to make the playoffs? I don't know, but you could definitely see them being like a 500 team without really trying too hard to see it, right? Like last year, if you predicted 500 for them, you're like, but now you're like, okay, yeah, they definitely have the pieces. It's just a matter of can they do it over a full 162. So Marcus Semien coming at number three. Number four on our list is a guy, I'll admit, I haven't been high on throughout his career, but now that he's 5 years in and been relatively consistent, it's probably time to give him his flowers. And if you win a batting title, you're probably deserving of said flowers. And that's Jeff McNeil, the second baseman for the New York Mets. Although, is he still playing second base for them? Or is he moving to third? I have no idea what the Mets are
going to do. He should be second.
Okay.
He also played like left field some last year. He's another utility guy, but mostly he should be their starting second baseman.
Yeah, we're going to leave him at second base right now. I know there was talk of him moving to third, but who knows?
Yeah, I think they're going with Escobar over there to start.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, Jeff McNeil coming in at number four on our list. Last year, like I said, was impressive with the batting title with 326 batting average, 5.7 WAR, 9 home runs, 62 RBIs. 836 OPS and 140 OPS plus. So the one thing, well, the biggest reason why I was never too high on Jeff McNeil is like back in his 2019 season where he kind of like broke out, 133 games, 23 home runs, 75 RBIs, 916 OPS plus. Great season, all-star season, deservedly so. But I just didn't think that was going to be him. And to an extent, I was right. Like the power numbers have certainly come down. Like he only hit 9 home runs last year in 148 games. He only hit 7 home runs in 120 games in 2021. So I was right in that regard. But like his on base percentage has remained very steady. 2021 was a rough year for him, but he really bounced back last year. His on base percentage has remained pretty steady. His batting average has been above 300, above 310. 4 of the 5 years he's been in the majors, and his OPS jumped back up, 150 points from 2021 to 2022. So it's like, okay, we can pretty much safely say he just had a down year in 2021, and 2022 is closer to who he really is than 2021 was.
Yeah, I'm with you. I've been a huge fan of McNeil. He was one of my main bounce back candidates from before last season, and it's safe to say, yeah, he bounced back pretty well. He's such a unique hitter. A lot of guys cannot hit like this. But because of his bat to ball skills, he's able to just hit the ball wherever he feels like it, and yep. he can survive off soft contact because he can place the ball. And not it's hard to place the ball, especially in today's MLB when everyone's throwing 100. So that is a skill that he has over a lot of guys, and that's why I think this hitting style is sustainable for McNeil, because he is just so strong bat to ball. And it's definitely I didn't even know he hit over 20 home runs in 19. That's kind of crazy to me, because he's not a home run guy. He doesn't need to be. No. He's able to slash. He's more of a slash type hitter. He likes to go opposite field for his doubles, gap to gap type of player. But like I said, I mean, you couldn't shift him when there was a shift, because he could hit it anywhere. Now you can't shift him anyway. So he's just going to, you know, he's going to be poking ground balls through everywhere and just pissing pitchers off left and right. So should be interesting. But his defense doesn't even get talked about, because people see him as a utility guy,
right?
Which he is, but he's incredible at second base as well. So I like him to be the main second baseman and just put him there and let him cook. I mean, the dude is amazing over there at second base defensively. So another really great player, expecting him to have another great season.
Yeah, utility guys, and I'm kind of guilty of this myself, they get this like negative connotation that they're not good defensively. They're just kind of average everywhere. But that's not the case for McNeil. Like, he's above average at several positions, but second base being the position he plays most often, it's time to give him his flowers defensively too. And back in 2021, he kind of got a little bit unlucky in some regards. Like, he had a pretty good hard hit percentage. His BABIP was like 50 points lower than it normally is. It was 70 points lower than 2022. So again, I do think 2022 is more indicative of who Jeff McNeil is as a player than 2021 was. So I think he'll be in the top five of second baseman in the future as well, because he's just been very consistent so far throughout his career. That it's safe to say now. Before, we were kind of just projecting or guessing, but now it's safe to say. All right, moving on, as we round out our top five in our second base rankings, is kind of the first interesting name, so to speak. And I don't mean any disrespect in that regard, but like it's certainly a conversation to be had about this player. That's Brandon Lau of the Tampa Bay Rays. So last year, he dealt with a nagging back injury for the majority of the year. Like, it kept him out for a while. He came back, clearly wasn't the same player, and then ultimately had season ending back surgery. So if you look at his 2022 stats, they were not very good. And he only played in 65 games. So, you know, you can't really compare it to 2021, but he had a 221 batting average, 308 on base percentage for a 691 OPS. Like, only 8 home runs, 25 RBIs in 65 games. Like, it's hard to tell who Brandon Lau is at this point, because he's really only played one full season so far. Like, in 2019, he was an all-star, finished third in the rookie of the year, but he only played in 82 games. So, you know, 2021, it was really his only full season where he played a good chunk of more than half the games. So we are kind of projecting with Brandon Lau, but I do think the underlying metrics and kind of outlook on him shows that he is one of the best or better second basemen in the game. And I do think, you know, provided his back is good and there's no lingering effects there, he's going to be fine in 2023 and show that he is, again, one of the better second basemen in the league. Is he going to hit, you know, 40 home runs? He hit 39 in 2021. No, probably not. But if he hits above 20 and like 70 RBIs and an 850 OPS, yeah, he belongs on this list and he belongs in the top half.
Yeah, and obviously the injury took its toll for him last year. Like you said, he just wasn't the same guy. Even when he was playing, he clearly wasn't healthy. So I'm kind of willing to almost throw this last season away for Lau and give him one more shot to come back and play a full season, because his only season he's played as a full season, you know, just discounting 2020, because obviously it wasn't a full year, he was great. So, you know, I would hope that if he gets a fully healthy season again, he'll be great again. Probably not going to hit 40 homers again, just because the ball is different and also changing all the time, apparently. So maybe he's not going to be approaching those numbers, but 25 to 30, I could definitely see. And that would be a good spot for him. He's got a great approach at the plate. He walks over 10% of the time, which I love. And his strikeout rate actually came down last year, which is interesting. I wonder if he was working on that before his injuries and ultimately sidelined him.
Or his back just caused him not to swing as much.
Potentially, yeah. You never know. So, so I'm kind of willing to say, yeah, last year he was hurt. Wasn't the same guy when he did play. I'm going to throw it out and say, give him at least one more chance here to prove that he is as good as he was in 21.
Agreed. And like his BABIP, like BABIP isn't a end all be all statistic, but it is one of those statistics that can help, like, you know, build a story, to a season. His BABIP was 263 last year, which was like very, very low. For context, back in 2019, his BABIP was 377. So it's like, you know, it's hard to pin who Brandon Lau is as a player. Like, using our best guess, it's probably somewhere in between those two, which if his BABIP's going to be raised by what, 50 to 60 points, then, you know, his 2022 season isn't even in the conversation, or doesn't belong in the conversation. He's going to be much, much better in 2023 if his BABIP kind of regresses or progresses towards the mean. So I do think Brandon Lau, I've been saying this a lot, will be just fine. He just needs to get healthy, and I think everything else will fall into place. All right, before we move on to 6 through 10 on our list, let's pause and get a word from our sponsors.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, let's continue on ranking the top second baseman in baseball. Continuing on with number 6 on our list is a guy who I wasn't high on, Jeff McNeil, but I've always been high on this guy since his breakout campaign back in, 2019 was his like real breakout campaign where he was like 4th in MVP voting. And that's Ketel Marte of the Arizona Diamondbacks. Played a little bit of center, played some shortstop, but really has his home at second base. And I believe their GM came out and said he was going to be their everyday second baseman for the 2023 campaign. 2022 was a down year for him, especially compared to 2021. 2021, he only played 90 games. So him playing 137 last year, that was an improvement, but otherwise statistically kind of had a down year. 14 home runs, or sorry, I'm looking at 2021, 12 home runs, 52 RBIs, 727 OPS, 1.5 WAR. So again, he's one of those players. Is he streaky like we've seen? Because again, 2019 was excellent, 981 OPS. 2020 COVID season obviously affected everyone differently, 732 OPS. 2021 bounced back. 909 OPS, but it was a shortened year for him due to injury. 2022, 727 OPS. So it's like constantly, it's like this roller coaster. So if you're using the roller coaster method to project Ketel Marte, he's going to have an OPS above 900 this year, and he's going to be excellent. But I think staying on the field is his biggest objective right now, and understandably so, because the Diamondbacks need him if they want to have any chance at competing in any regard in 2023.
Yeah, I was I drank the Kool-Aid last year for Marte. Me too. And me too. It didn't taste very good. So I was more disappointed with the fact that he was just a generally poor defensive player at second base. I thought that moving back to his natural position was going to help him, because he wasn't a natural center fielder, and it definitely showed when he did play center field. And it just didn't. He just was bad, simply. And it's kind of weird because he was always a great defender over there. So I wonder if maybe that was just a blip and he'll figure it out. But it was pretty disappointing, especially because I think I had him way up at like number two or something last year. So, but obviously, he's clearly got that great player within him. The consistency factor is now rearing its head, because I was willing to obviously strike 2020 from the radar and look at basically what he did in 19 and 20 and 21, which was excellent. But maybe seems like he could be a guy that goes up and down, like you said, a roller coaster. And that's a little scary, because you don't want to have someone that's unreliable as like your, you know, main star player, basically. So if he can have a bounce back, that's really going to help this squad out. I actually think the Diamondbacks have a lot of young talent, mm-hmm. and could potentially, if they were to overperform a little bit, could make some noise and at least challenge for to be in the playoff race at the end of the season. Maybe not necessarily making it, but a big reason why they would be able to challenge for a spot would be if Ketel Marte remembers how to be Ketel Marte.
Right. Yeah, that's for sure. And the Diamondbacks are good for one of those surprise playoff pushes every few years. Like, I think it was...
Yeah, they sneak in sometimes.
2018, they were randomly in, like, the NLCS or something. Or, like, one game away, whatever it was. But, yeah, Ketel Marte, like, he got a little bit unlucky last year. But, again, it could have been... He just was bad last year compared to his 2021 season. But his BABIP dropped 80 points. He got a little bit more pull happy than he was in 2021. So
he had a really bad start as well. We should mention he had a horrendous start to the season, similar to how like Simeon was, but the difference being the defense, obviously.
Yeah. Like his hard hit percentage was down. His strikeout rate was up. So it could have just been a down year, but I think he's just one of those guys that will just need to find more consistency, whatever that looks like. Maybe it's not as high of a ceiling or as good of a performance as 2019 or 2021, but I do think it is better than what he showed in 2022, and that's what we're counting on in our rankings. You know, I believe I had him sixth. Let me double check. I had him seventh. Trey, you had him eighth. And Ryan did not actually have him ranked. Oh no, sorry. I was like, Ryan did not have him ranked. No, yeah, Ryan had him fifth.
How did he get to number six?
Yeah, Ryan had him fifth. So I do think we all are still believers in Ketel Marte, and the biggest thing on his side is he's still only 29 years old. Mm-hmm. So it's not like he hit a cliff at age 33 and has fallen out of favor. Like, he still got good years in front of him. So now it's staying healthy, getting more consistent, and I think he can do that in 2023. At least I hope he can. All right. Speaking of another interesting name on our list. So you might hear this name, you're like, that's not a second baseman. Well, yes,
but he is now.
Yeah. Nico Horner, the Cubs former Cubs shortstop, will now be the Cubs second baseman with the acquisition of Dansby Swanson in Chicago. So, you know, we are projecting a bit, but Nico Horner does have like stats at second base or as a second baseman. Back in 2020, 2021, like he had, it's not a huge sample size, but he had a decent amount of games played at second base. And Trey, I'm not going to steal your thunder here, but his performance at second base defensively was like otherworldly. So now that he's sliding from shortstop to second base, he was like a good shortstop defensively, but he's in, like I said, otherworldly defensive second baseman. And I think that's only going to help him. But offensively, he had a great year last year too. After not hitting a home run in 2020 or 2021 in a combined, you know, 92 games, he had 10 last year, which doesn't sound like a lot, but second basemen aren't necessarily expected to hit 40 bombs. It's more of a catcher type thing where if you get solid power production from the position, you take it, but that's not necessarily expected. 10 home runs, 55 RBIs, 736 OPS, 4.5 WAR. Trey, you kind of led the charge on him. Why are you so high on Nico Hoerner?
Oh, so many reasons, Nick. But the main being that he is a natural second baseman, and he is, like you said, otherworldly. Let's get into the numbers a bit, because I just absolutely love this stat. In 2021, Hoerner played 251 and a third innings and had and was plus +9 outs above average in that time. Last year, he was a really good shortstop, too. Let's not get it twisted. Really good. Over 1,000 innings, he had 13 outs above average. So in a fourth of the time, he almost reached the same outs above average at second base. That's how good this guy is over there. So that is going to be a ridiculous defensive middle infield with Dansby Swanson joining that squad. But in terms of the offensive side, I believe Hoerner is a guy that could actually hit similar to how Jeff McNeil hits. He is a contact-oriented guy. He doesn't strike out hardly at all. And I think that he could potentially rock a batting average over 300 this year. And he showed a little bit of pop last year, especially considering last year was a down year for power for everybody. To see him, you know, kind of bust through and show some pop there was a good thing. A little concerned with his on-base percentage, but like I said, I think he'll be able to hit over 300 and that won't matter as much. But the defense is going to be unbelievable, I think. It's going to be extremely impressive, and that's really the main reason why I like him so much, is his defense is that good, I believe.
Yeah, it's like he only needs to be kind of replacement level offensively. Yeah,
just a good hitter.
Right.
Just be a good hitter and just be ridiculous on the bases and be ridiculous on defense.
And he'll be just fine.
Exactly.
Just.
Four F-war last year as a 25-year-old who basically just got his full run at a major league season. So
yeah, that's worth noting as well. Like, he didn't even play a full season in 2021. He only played 44 games.
Yep.
So it's like he was really just getting settled in 2022, and it wasn't at his natural position. So it's like, who knows what 2023 is going to hold.
Now it's here we go, baby.
Right. Let's exactly. And that team again should be a little bit better than they were in 2022, because they're actually signing guys to long-term deals and making moves. What a concept.
Yeah.
After they traded their star players in 2020, who knew that was allowed, that you were allowed to sign other star players. But anyways, I do agree with you. I'm on that bandwagon now of Nico Hoerner. I think he's going to be quite the good player in 2023, and it wouldn't surprise me to see him crack our top five next year in our consensus rankings. All right, moving on to the next guy. Speaking of one of those guys where it's just like, at least for me, it's kind of hard to figure out where to put him or just how good he is, because the sample size isn't huge. It was only his fourth season and really only his second full season, but another batting title guy, the second baseman representing the, you know, contact, get on base type, you know, player. And that's Luis Urias. Subject to a offseason trade. It was only like the second or third time in MLB history that the reigning batting title champ was traded the following offseason, going from Minnesota to Miami in the Pablo Lopez deal. And that, as Trey mentioned earlier, knocked Jazz Chisholm out of his second base spot into center field, which will be kind of interesting to see how that shakes out too, because second base, obviously you want good defense, but it's not necessarily regarded as like the premier defensive positions. Those belong to catcher, shortstop, and center field up the middle. And, you know, if you want to get technical, second base is up the middle too. So you could probably put second base as like fourth on the list, but it will be interesting to see how Jazz Chisholm goes from fourth on the list to top three on the list in a very demanding center field position. But anyways, we're talking about Luis Urias. So Luis Urias, the new Marlins second baseman, last year, like I said, AL batting champ, .316, batting average .375, OPS .420, slugging percentage for a .795, OPS .4.4 WAR, 130 OPS plus. Again, it's hard for me to like really figure out. It sounds kind of silly to say, because his batting average over his 4 years of his career, .334, .321, .294, .316. It's like, this is basically Jeff McNeil. I'm falling into the Jeff McNeil trap again because I see the home run numbers. I'm like, oh, he's not that good. Like, I'm falling into the common baseball fan like trap that Jeff McNeil had me in, the blender. So I probably should have Luis Urias higher, but I don't know. It wouldn't shock me to see him not do well in 2023. And a lot of that has to do from going from the weakest division in baseball to probably the best division in baseball. But what do you think?
You know, I'm kind of with you. I'm a big fan of Urias. I think his hitting approach is really fun. And I think he is able to, he'll probably still be able to continue to hit for average. But yeah, I don't love the fit of this Miami roster in general. I think it's weird and their outfield is strange, but we'll get into that another day. But, you know, Marlins Park, Lone Depot Park, whatever it is now, it's a chasm. And, you know, for Urias, who's already not a power guy, who already struggles to hit homers, that's going to be tough on his power numbers. And, you know, you're not looking for a ton of power from this guy. I think he'll still hit for a fine average. I think what he's going to have to do is probably prioritize on base percentage a little bit more and try to work some more walks.
Yeah.
Because otherwise that lack of slug is going to come back to hurt him a little bit. I'm also curious to see how he adjusts being a full-time second baseman. He played second base last year, not full-time, but he was good over there when he played it. But we'll have to see how getting even more reps, you know, affects that defensive ability. He can also play multiple positions, which is good. He's not necessarily great at any of them, but he can play them. Mm-hmm. So we'll have to see. It's going to be weird. I don't even know if he's going to end up being their second baseman or if he'll end up moving to a different position, because it's the Miami experiment, as I'm going to dub it, is going to be worth watching just to see what they even do with that lineup. So I still really like Urias. I think he'll be a fine player for them. It's just not my favorite fit.
Yeah, agreed. And like for Minnesota, and obviously I'm not in the front office, I don't know their reasoning for trading him, but he's only 26 years old. So like, in theory, that's a guy coming off a batting title you want to keep around to build up a young core, but they viewed him as expendable. And Pablo Lopez is solid. I'm a big Pablo Lopez fan. So I get wanting to add pitching, but, you know, to trade it, a guy, this young guy with all these years of control, like I'm almost like self-confirming biasing myself in like, is there something we're not seeing that the Twins saw that say, hey, let's sell high on this guy? So I think that's, you know, part Jeff McNeil trap, part self-confirming bias, part like, what are the Twins cooking type of thing with Luis Urias? But we'll see. But again, with the NL East and specifically the pitching in the NL East, it would not shock me at all to see Luis Urias kind of plummet and honestly have the worst season of his career, because he hasn't had like a bad season so far. So I guess that's kind of a low bar for him to hit, having his worst season of his career. But the pitching's good, and he doesn't have like exceptionally high walk rates to kind of sustain his production. It's been a lot of bad to ball skills, and you have a lot of strikeout pitchers in the NL East.
Yeah, and last thing about Urias is I think he's definitely one of those high floor, low ceiling type of guys. Like, you know, you're going to get a solid performance, but like, is he really on the next level? I don't know. And I think we'll find out. We'll see how he fits with Miami, but I still really like him as a player. I just don't know about the fit.
Yeah. Agreed. Well, we talked about Luis Urias. Let's talk about the guy who's replacing him, so to speak, in Minnesota. And that's Jorge Polanco. This is a guy I was very high on last year. I know that. Split time between shortstop and second base, but now with Carlos Correa joining the Twins last year and then obviously being re-signed there after a drama-filled
whatever
off-season.
Whatever the hell happened in the off-season.
Yeah. Jorge Polanco figures to be the second everyday second baseman for the foreseeable future for the Twins, or at least until he hits free agency. Last year, down year from 2021, but it's like still solid. Like it's still a respectable year. 16 home runs, 56 RBI, 751 OPS, 2.8 WAR, 117 OPS plus. Like Jorge Polanco, I thought he could like challenge for a top five spot, but now I'm realizing like he's going to live in that 6-10 range at second base. And that's going to be fine for him. Like he might have another all-star year, you know, some, whether it be in 2023 or down the line. Like he might have those spike years like he did back in 2019. Why did every second baseman peak in 2019?
Interesting. It's like, I think it's because of the ball, man. You know, yeah, second maybe. Basemen aren't a power position, but I bet the home run totals for second baseman were probably historic that year. So
I'm like looking at all of these, these players, like just reading these stats, obviously real time. And all of them had their all-star campaign in 2019. I'm just like,
everybody was eating in 2019.
Yeah, everybody eats. But yeah, I think Jorge Polanco, like he's just a solid second baseman. He's above that middle class that I mentioned earlier, but he's not quite tier one or probably not even tier two, but he is top of tier three and just a solid guy. I can see why the Twins felt okay moving Arias in that regard, because they had a guy in Polanco they could slide in and honestly get more power production from. So you could kind of, you will trade Arias's bat to ball skills for Polanco's power, or I guess Correa's power, whatever, you know, you want to compare. But Jorge Polanco is like a solid second baseman, solid shortstop. He has some versatility as well. So I think the Twins are fine in that regard, but Polanco as a player, he needs to be better than he was in 2022. Like it certainly was a down year for him. But I do think again, 2019 and 2021 are more indicative of who he is as a player, like a OPS around 800 than last year where his OPS was down 50 points or so.
Yeah, I actually have had Polanco a little bit higher.
Yeah,
on my
you
list.
Were high on him.
And I think the reason for that is due to his advanced metrics. Kind of, he was pretty freaking unlucky. He ended up with a 405 slugging percentage, for example, but his expected slug was 451. And that completely changes the entire landscape of his slash line with 50 extra points of slugging. He still ended with a 119 WRC plus. He actually changed his approach drastically to take a lot more walks. He doubled his walk rate from 7 to 14.4%. That is at the top of the league. That is very high. So I'm wondering if he's going to revert to his old approach, and because it didn't really work for the power this year, or if he's going to continue with this approach and maybe some of those numbers come back to the norm, and you can see that power spike along with the on-base percentage. And we never really know because his walk rate, if that stays the same and the power goes up, you're looking at a ridiculous hitter. But in terms of defense, he's never really been, that's not really his strong suit. It's all about the bat with him. So really got to see that bat come back. I think he has a chance to actually have a big year this year. He also wasn't completely healthy last year. He only played 100 games. So if he can stay healthy, that Twins team is really weird. I think that there's a way that they could be really good, and I also think that they could also be bad and just totally disappointing like they were last year. So a lot could have to do with Polanco. If he has a huge year for them, that could be a big reason that maybe they make a playoff push.
Yeah, they're the AL Arizona Diamondbacks.
Yeah, pretty
like,
much.
They're good for a playoff push every like three years or
they
so.
They could do it, but like, will they? I don't know.
Yeah, probably not. So yeah, it will be interesting to see how Jorge Polanco does and the Twins do in 2023. All right, moving on to number 10 and rounding out our top 10 second baseman is a guy that, again, kind of difficult to figure out who he is or what he's going to be, and that's Gavin Lux of the Los Angeles Dodgers. I will preface this by saying I don't think we've seen comfortable Gavin Lux, if that makes sense.
100% with you.
They brought him up in 2019 for 23 games, and he was fine. He was only 21, but he was fine. And then 2020, again, COVID year, still basically prospect status type player, played 19 games, was really bad. And then 2021, he was a full-time player, so to speak, 102 games, struggled, but you know that they acquired Trey Turner and they had they still had Corey Seager at that time, right? Corey Seager got hurt and then they traded
him. He was playing they had him in left field. He's never played outfield before last season. Like so he definitely was not playing to where he would be comfortable, like you said.
Right. So it's like, you know, he was fine, but certainly not comfortable. And haven't even mentioned the fact that he plays for the Dodgers. It's not like he's joining the Nats where there's really no expectations. You just got to work on getting better. Like, no, there's expectations with the Dodgers. They're trying to go places and achieve things. And that's not an easy situation to just be dropped in the middle of, especially around guys like Mookie Betts and Trey Turner and Freddie Freeman and Will Smith and all the guys they have over there. Like it can be very intimidating. Now they're still the Dodgers, right? But he has basically two full years under his belt in 2021 and 2022. And he can kind of settle in at second base. Like, yeah, he played second base the majority of the year last year, but you know, I think he was a shortstop coming up. So like, he's still kind of settling in as an everyday second baseman at the major league level. And there was kind of some thought that he might switch over to shortstop with the departure of Trey Turner and free agency. But then the Dodgers went out and traded for Miguel Rojas, who's a very, very, very good defensive shortstop and probably going to be like a very, very good offensive shortstop this year, knowing how the Dodgers are. So I just think Gavin Lux 2023 will be the year he really settles in. And I'm expecting an increase, a bump in his numbers from 2022. And his 2022, again, was not that bad. 2.5 WAR, 6 home runs, 42 RBIs, 745 OPS, 105 OPS plus. So just above league average. And it sounds like, Trey, you agree. What do you kind of think of Gavin Lux long term, or you know, in 2023, or both?
I think I'm a fan in both cases, really. Like you said, he just hasn't had a consistent role on that team. And listen, some guys can play like that. Some guys can be a utility guy and have success, but it's hard and not everyone can do it. And Gavin Lux seems like if he can settle in at second base and be their second baseman, he's going to have a good year. He's a good defender over there. It's clearly a strong position for him defensively, way stronger than he is in the outfield. And I really like his plate approach. He is a guy that will hit the ball all over the field, hits line drives, gets on base via the walk at a good clip. I think he has the potential to even raise that walk rate he's very, very patient at the plate. So definitely a guy that I could see increasing that walk rate even more. And I think it's just about the bat. As long as the bat can stay to just above average level, I think the glove is going to improve even more as he gets more time over there at second. And this is a guy that people are not talking enough about at this position. I have not seen a single ranking besides ours that has Gavin Lux on it. Not once. If you have one, let me know. I'd love to see it, but I haven't seen any. And I feel like that's kind of BS, man. This guy's on the Dodgers. Like, I know the Dodgers are being weird this offseason because they want to go off after Otani like next year and stuff. So, but like, this guy's really good and people should pay attention to him. And I think he's going to have a great season next year.
How funny would let me back up. Who's the Dodgers' third baseman this year? Because Justin Turner's gone now. Do we know?
They've probably signed somebody.
Yeah, I'm probably just.
But they haven't done. They haven't had the big signings that they're
right.
So I haven't I don't know what they've done. Really, it feels like they've done nothing. But they definitely have done stuff.
I was just gonna say, like, it would be so funny if they signed Manny Machado next year, and like he's obviously played for LA. The Dodgers. Yeah, he played for the Dodgers before.
But they hate him now
because the Padres signed Xander Bogaerts. They have Fernando Tatis, who I get is right fielder now or left fielder, wherever they're going to play him. But like, they have so many long-term contracts, they can't keep them all. And Machado's going to opt out. I mean, they could, but they're not going to have any depth, which was their problem last year. Like, they already, you know, lost a bunch of their pitching. So and they're going to run out of prospects.
Yeah, they just re-signed Darvish too. To like a
That was weird.
They signed him through age 42. I mean, I like Darvish, but
yeah,
that's pretty insane.
I think they just added more years to lower the AAV, which makes sense. But I don't know why you wouldn't just do the, you know, deferred money thing that the Nats do. But anyways, yeah, back to Gavin Lux. I think he's going to be solid. Granted, he's got to learn to live with the pressure and expectations that come with playing in LA and playing for the Dodgers. But I do think he's probably my pick to skyrocket up these rankings. And
yeah, and he's
we'll look smart for it because
yeah, we're the only ones obviously ranked. That would be awesome. I like looking smart, but obviously, a big thing here. Also, he's 25.
Yeah,
like. He's real young too. There's a lot of young talent here, but I definitely like Lux heading into next season. Potentially being one of the studs in that lineup. I mean, with the departure of Trey Turner, they're going to need a guy to, you know, he's not going to hit like that, but you know, they need a dude at the top of that order that can hit the ball. So I think that's a good spot for him. And again, going back to the first thing you said, it's all about that comfort level. I think that's going to be a huge deal for him to, you know, be the main guy as a second baseman officially. Now he's not playing for a job. It's his job.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So that rounds out our top 10 again, just to recap our rankings. Jose Altuve takes the top spot, followed by Andrés Giménez, Marcus Semien, Jeff McNeil, Brandon Lau rounding out the top five, and then Ketel Marte, Nico Horner, Luis Arraez, Jorge Polanco, and Gavin Lux for the top 10. Did you have any honorable mentions?
Yeah, you mentioned Glaber, and that was pretty much the only guy, as well as Ozzie Albies. So I feel like we should probably talk about him.
Yeah, Ozzie Albies. That's probably one where we probably overreacted overcorrected.
I didn't. I would just like to point out that that last year I was already not that high on Albies.
That's true.
No, but obviously he was injured, and I don't know. He just hasn't been like a consistent hitter, so it's tough. We don't really know what he is at this point, because last year when he played, he was pretty bad, and then he had some unfortunate injuries. So it's really just going to depend on this year. Maybe we overreacted by leaving him off entirely, but he would probably be like my number 11, number 12 guy. He's right on the outside for me right now.
But someone's going to call us out on.
Yeah, we'll definitely get roasted.
Like forgiving Brandon Lau, but not ranking Ozzie Albies. Like I could definitely see someone calling us out for that. And in hindsight, I kind of agree, but
you know,
it happens. I forgot how good he was in 2021.
Yeah. One of them's a Brave and one of them isn't.
Yeah, that's what it was. Can I offer up a hot take?
Absolutely. I love hot takes.
I don't know how hot this is. I'll leave that up to you for the temperature gauge on this take. Jake Cronenworth, most overrated player in baseball.
Overrated, damn.
Yeah. Well, maybe not in baseball. That's a lot of players.
Yeah.
Overrated second baseman,
you think?
Overrated second baseman.
Yeah. I don't even know if he's playing second or if
he's second. Well, I guess I don't know about this year. Well, yeah, he's definitely playing second because they have Xander and Machado on the left side. So,
and
yeah,
he's been bouncing around positions.
Yeah. But like he does
get a lot of buzz,
but at the same
for
time,
being like kind of good.
He hasn't. Like he's played different positions, but he still played the majority of his games at second base. Like last year, he played in 158 games. 147 of them were at second. 2021, 152 games, 94 of them were at second. And he only played so many games at shortstop because of the injury to Fernando Tatis. And like back in 2020, which was his debut year, 54 games, 38 of them were at second base. So it's like, yeah, he has versatility, but he's still their second baseman. So that's why I'm like including him in this topic. He definitely could be considered a utility guy as well. But I think he's so overrated. And, you know, he's had two all-star years. Him being an all-star last year is like wild to me. I think he wasn't on the initial wave, but then someone got hurt and he made it in, or someone, one of the pitchers like opted out.
But I do not remember, but yeah, last year,
I think he's overrated.
Last year, I'll agree. All-star status was maybe a little overzealous for him. And like, that's definitely a hot take, because I don't think he's overrated. I think he's a good player, and that's about it. I think he's a good player
that gets regarded as this like great player.
Yeah, I think it that's probably what also I mean. It was probably because of his 2020 year, where he was kind of a really big piece of that offense, and they made the playoffs for the first time again. So a lot of people are attached to that, but he's still definitely a solid player, though, I would say. But
I mean,
yeah, I'll put that's on the hot scale. That's definitely hot.
He's regressed, you know, pretty decently like each year. So I don't know. I just think he's overrated, and I wanted to point that out, because like I saw him, you know, Gavin Lux was off a lot of lists. That's because Jake Cronenworth was on a lot of lists, and I'm just like, oh, he's not really in consideration for me, at least not top 10. So just had to throw that out there. Everyone loves a good hot take. All right. What do you want to do next? You want to do shortstops or third baseman?
Shortstop. Yeah.
Shortstop. We'll just go around the diamond.
Go around the diamond.
Okay. So,
you could go by the numbers. The numbers always, like, every time, like, five is third base. Why is five third base? Like, I'm always thinking about going just around, you know, counterclockwise there. So
I got you. All right. So next week we'll do shortstops. So again, that has some real star power to it. So that'll be a fun discussion as we kind of like nitpick, so to speak, as to why we have a guy second instead of first or third.
It's gonna be really tough.
Yeah. So that'll be a fun discussion with a bunch of recognizable names. So be sure to tune into that. And be sure to check out halfstreethighheat.com. Like I said, last episode, we just hired 6 new writers. So we're going to be pumping out content every day, sometimes multiple times a day. So be sure to check out the site. And like I said earlier, check out Half Street High Heat on YouTube. Trey putting out great stuff every single day. Well, not every single day, every single week.
Not quite. That would be cool though, if I could.
Yeah, that would be cool. Every single week. I believe you have one coming out tomorrow or the next day. Well, actually, I don't know what day this is going to air, so I'm not going to promise that. But the week of February 13th, Trey has a video, possibly 2 videos coming out. I'll put it that way.
That is true. That's yeah, correct.
There we go. So be sure to check out Half Street High Heat and subscribe to our YouTube page. Trey, you got anything else before we head out?
Let's go baseball.
All right, guys, that does it for this episode. We might be back with a normal regular Half Street High Heat episode, might not, don't know yet. Really depends on like the news cycle. We might do something for pitchers and catchers reporting, which will be Wednesday this week, might not. But we do have an episode of the Amateur Update coming out this week with Monty and new Half Street High Heat team member Will, as they preview the start of the college baseball season. So be sure to check that out this week, and that'll be on this podcast feed, so you won't have to go searching for it elsewhere. It'll be on the Half Street High Heat podcast feed, so be sure to be on the lookout for that this week as Monty gets back to his superb college baseball coverage. All right, that does it for this episode. In the meantime, as Trey has so eloquently put, let's go baseball.
There's a new breeze blowing off the banks of the Potomac. A new team's mowing down the ranks of their opponents. The Nationals are smashing balls, so that the commentator who has the calls has passed the wall to see you later. by the early light of dawn. Well, you can see they're running scared, cause the kinds of bombs we're launching are bursting in the air. Tell the Library of Congress that they might not want to look, cause we're putting curly W's in every book.